We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a strike! What a screamer! Zola! And a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
This Saturday in the Cup Final, history is about to repeat itself. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right. History is going to repeat itself. As they famously once sang, it's all just a little bit of history repeating, except we don't know which history. Is it going to be 2017? Or is it going to be 2019? I am going to root for the 2017 variety. We already dispatched City in the semifinal. Now we have Chelsea in the final. We owe them for last summer's Baku massacre. The massacre of Baku, as it's known. We owe Olivier Giroud. God knows I owe Olivier Giroud something. Who knows what it is I owe him. We owe those pricks. And much like Petr Cech had the chance to play and show up his former club in Baku, now David Luiz has the chance to do the very same, hopefully with different outcome. This is the Cup Final preview, and we are thrilled to have you here for it. We will have one additional podcast tomorrow for patrons, an instant reaction pod after the Cup Final for patrons, then the Cup Final full podcast on Monday, and then next week we will have some squad building transfer stuff, and I am building a roster of talent to impress and delight for those podcasts. Not that our normal roster of talent doesn't impress and delight. I will tell you that we are short some talent today because Tim, you may know him on Twitter at Stoberto, is making a new human today. He is actually doing nothing. His wife is making a new human, and we wish him and his new human and his wife all the best. What a wonderful, optimistic thing to do in 2020 of all times. But we certainly hope that it is a harbinger of good things at the weekend. And I think it would be kind of hilarious if Tim, of all people, missed the Cup Final. Gonna have to root for a short labor. For a lot of reasons, to be fair. Paul's on Twitter, Paz my pants. Hello, Paz.
Woohoo.
Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
We did yesterday on Patreon, we did a What We Got Wrong podcast where we revisited predictions of the season and what we got wrong. Clive, I noticed you were not on it. I can only presume you got nothing wrong.
Absolutely. There's no point in me turning up, really, was there? You know the drill. I don't get anything wrong, do I? I mean, nope. If I do...
I'm not going to own up to it. Look, now, to be fair, we did a section on what we got right, but for you, that would just be called all the podcasts, our back catalog. So there's really no reason. We wouldn't have had time to record all that. So enough. I kid. I joke. I know you hate lineup questions, Clive, but I'm going to start with you with one anyway, just because I want to get the podcast off on the wrong foot. It's the Cup Final. who you got, who's starting, who's the army you're putting on the pitch, who are the Warriors who are going to bring home the cup and bring home that oh-so-delightful Europa League football we've all been craving.
Well, yeah, we had a little chat about this previously. I think you said, why not just go with the semi-final team? And there's lots of people that could say that works, obviously bringing in a holding for Mustafi. That works. You could, you know, Hector's back in training now, so, you know, looks as though with his big game experience that he will start on the right-hand side. I probably expect him to. It's a final. You don't mess about in the final. It's just whether who starts on the left. Is it Maitland-Niles or is it Saka? So, and that's presumed we're going to go over back three with Tini as the sort of hybrid left centre-half stroke left-back, depending on when we got the ball or not. And so the rest of the middle two and the front three, I don't think there's no issues there. We're not going to do anything like put Eddie in or anything like that. They sort of pick themselves. So I think we're all presuming we're going to go with that shape. And given what Chelsea have done recently, playing a similar shape, I think it's be sort of sensible. They're going to match us up, you know, with their back three with Aspilicueta, Zouma. And so they are going to match us up there, and they're going to have probably a Giroud at centre forward, which I think would suit holding. So, yeah, it's going to be a 3-5-2 game, a 3-4-3 game, a 3-4-2-1 game. It's going to be all of those things. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see how tactically we move within the game at the various stages. I think that's going to be the key. I mean, that's going to be the key of Arteta's Arsenal, actually, how we solve in-game problems and how flexible our players are to move around in different formations depending where we are on the pitch, what we're trying to achieve, what side we're looking to overload on. I think that is the interesting thing about his tactics. I'm, you know, very excited to see what he's doing with certain players, and I think I see that continue at the weekend, which makes us very hard to read for an opposing manager.
Yeah, I guess a question then, Paul, is how much of our lineup should just be what it's going to be, what it was in the semifinal, and, you know, maybe just stick with what worked, versus how much of it should be predicated on what we expect Chelsea to do in stopping them. Because, you know, I mean, Lampard seems to have a soft spot for Mason Mount. He's been reluctant to play Pulisic, although Pulisic has sort of been one of the players of Project Restart, and I think he's gotten to the point now where it's hard for Lampard not to pick him. To what extent should our lineup be picked with an eye towards nullification, in the sense of, like, if we think the danger is Pulisic on their left, our right, you know, maybe a Maitland-Niles on that side to help shut him down. Do you think Arteta will set us out with an eye towards nullifying their threat, or do you think he'll be more inclined to just go with what he feels is his strongest setup?
I think he would definitely look at options for nullification if there were some obvious choices there, but, you know, Mount isn't Mahrez in terms of what he does out on the right-hand side. I see him more as a guy who's going to drop into midfield rather than somebody who's going to turn into his left and go straight at the box. I mean, obviously, he's a player who creates options, but I see his major threat as dropping in to that more of the 10 spot to some degree, or the advanced midfielder, and giving them the overload there. So I don't think Maitland-Niles necessarily solves that problem. You don't necessarily want him dropping into midfield with him and opening up that wing. So I think Saka is the guy, because he's going to give James trouble and push him back, assuming James is on that wing. And, you know, between Tierney and Saka, that's the wing we need to create on, because we don't have a 10. We've been through that before. It probably won't be the right-hand side we create on, so we better have options to create here. We can't sit back for the whole game, so we've got to be able to get up and push them back and relieve pressure ourselves through attacking. But yeah, Mount could be an interesting one in that midfield, and from our side, we're going to have to get our overloads too, and that's a key role for Lacazette. Hopefully he has a good game dropping into midfield, marking out Jorginho or whoever, but midfield's going to be a key battle here.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so it's funny. I sort of have recollections of our two games against them in the league being disappointing outcomes, but where we played relatively well. I felt we should have won the home game. The away game, I believe, was the one where we went down to 10 men, but still the Martinelli wonder goal led to it being a 2-2 draw sort of unexpectedly. A little unfair as a result of that to look at XG, because the total XG sum for us against Chelsea this season, 1.4, and against us, 4.6. So not ideal, but again, a lot of that coming in the away game where we had 40% possession. We were outshot massively and we were down to 10 men. Hector Bellerin captained us against Chelsea away. I think that there was something to that, and it wouldn't surprise me if he starts and something like that happens again. He has it in for them, especially Marcus Alonso, and I sort of wonder if Alonso will start, and if he does, I like our chances to really attack up that wing. Clive,
we know if he's fully fit, by the way.
Well, he's back in training. We don't know if he's fully fit. I suspect he is. I think he was just sort of rested and taken out of the firing line. Not to say that he wasn't suffering from something, but I think he's fit, and I think he'll start. I mean, Clive, let's talk about some of the battles that are really going to matter here. And, I mean, yeah. I guess the one that, for me, this makes this really interesting, right? Let's talk midfield first. We can't really particularly contest the midfield with them. I don't think we can contest the midfield with many people. We haven't really tried that, though, and largely bypassed a lot of quick progression out to the wings. How important is that midfield battle? I mean, with Kovacic and Jorginho in there, they have a high-volume passing duo that can really maintain possession. We don't really necessarily have that. But at the same time, like, I do think that maybe Ceballos can have a little bit of joy wriggling free in midfield and starting us in transition. How do you see the midfield battle playing out?
Right, so Chelsea have got a similar dilemma to us. They've got Kante is just back fit. Mm-hmm. If Kante is fit and they go to play him, similar to what they did in Baku, and they dragged him off his deathbed and he came out there and did really well. If Kante comes in, they may go the midfield three. They're very similar to what we, you know, I know we touched on the midfield three in the last game. But, you know, I think we're going to probably go with a back three and not a 4-3-3. But Chelsea are going for the same dilemma. They're not sure if they trust Jorginho and Kovacic. So let's not pretend that they're better than our two. I don't think there's much between them, actually. I think Ceballos and Xhaka versus Jorginho and Kovacic. Chelsea fans are thinking, can we defend? Right? And we're thinking, can we keep the ball? Can we progress the ball?
Yeah.
But similar dilemmas, right? So James is a young lad out on the right. So they could easily go to a back four and bring Kante in, take James out, and have more experience on the pitch. And this is why I was pretty heavy on Saka being selected in the last pod, and although people are thinking Maitland-Niles, but I think Saka. And the reason why, if Saka plays, we can do what we like. We can play the back five if he plays high up, or he just goes straight to a back four, and Saka becomes the third midfielder. So without making one single substitution change, I keep talking about this thing, the hybrid player. I mean, that to have that in your locker with someone like Tierney and Saka to be able to flip formations in the blink of a switch, knowing they've done both formations, knowing that Saka's played that left eight role, you get our own little flying V going in the middle of midfield, and that could really work nicely. I think for us it's important we stop the progression and stop the comfort of Jorginho and Kovacic. So I think it's really important we get behind them and play through them into Pepe in particular, so he gets it turned around. I think you need to break that twosome up. Don't let him feel comfortable. Don't let him start popping. Don't let him start getting to a Brazilian-type rhythm in there. Get hold of them. Play through them. Make them turn around. Make them run backwards. Their defence is actually worse than ours. I heard James say today they've conceded more goals than us, which they have. But what's killing us is our ability to score, create, and turn those draws into wins. I don't think there's a lot between these teams. I really don't. I do think, well, I know we touched on it, the first goal is absolutely massive. Only in the story of this game is everything. Right? Mm. So the focus of the press has been very much on Giroud, for example. And if you know anything about Olivier Giroud, he's somebody that's always gone through his life trying to turn people's opinions around. He's getting a lot of praise right now. He's getting a lot of praise. Tammy Abraham ran out of puff. Giroud's come in and really got Chelsea into the top four. Now, Giroud with praise. I'm not sure that's so good. I've got a funny feeling we can handle him. I much prefer to face him. I know it's his really tempting fate than a very quick Tammy Abraham.
I totally agree. But I think it suits what our defenders want to do better. I don't think we're as vulnerable to the physical battles as we are to someone who's got better pace and tricky running and things like that. I agree with you.
Absolutely. So the thing about the Chelsea game, I want to get this one out there because I think it's really important for everyone to sort of note, whatever we do, we're going to have to beat them twice. Because the team they put out, at the end of the game, they're going to bring on Abraham, Loftus-Cheek, Hudson-Odoi, Willian, Pulisic and Mount, we're presuming they start, but one of them may not start. Willian may start.
I think Willian will start, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically, I think we literally have to beat them twice. The first time I sort of saw that was in the old days when Man United had York and Cole. And then once you beat York and Cole, they just drag Solskjaer and Sheringham off the bench. You had to beat them twice. And I think we have to do that with Chelsea. We have to be prepared for that. Be prepared to dig in late. And have to be prepared to manage their speed and power. So if we control the story of the game, we have an option. They're going to have to pile on different attackers and go like for like. If we go behind, they can add speed by Abraham and they can get us on the counter-attack. So I know I keep saying it and it's really boring, but first goal is absolutely massive in this game. It's going to be hard enough to beat Chelsea once, let alone trying to beat them twice, given the strength they'll have on the bench, which we just don't have. Mm. Not the same level, same quality. That's understandable.
Paul, you have a slightly different view on the Giroud dilemma?
Well, I think Five sets it up right that Giroud, he kind of needs to be the underdog, proving the point. The problem is, I think he will be in this FA Cup final. He'll have that chip on his shoulder to prove that the Arsenal hierarchy who wanted him gone, that perceived they that done him in, he'll get a chance, another chance to show them what they're missing. So I think he'll have his motivation will be there, his pissed offness, the pain he can channel. And I think the other thing is he gives them an option we won't have, which is they can play out from the back. They've got a little bit more in midfield where they're playing through there. And then finally, they can just play the direct long ball, which makes the other two options, gives them a little more space in the other two options because they can mix it up. To Giroud, who can flick it on for Pulisic or whoever's, or Willian and on the right, if that's who's there, probably Mount, but Pulisic for sure, as soon as we start to push up and play our higher line, which I think Luis will want against Giroud, because the knock against Giroud, of course, will be he's not super quick. He's actually pretty fast on the counter. It's just the gears 1 through 4 that aren't there, but he can run at speed. But I think Luis and our back line will want to push up, have a bit of a high line, and the flicked ball from Giroud is going to hurt us in this game. So I'm not pleased we're facing, in fact, Giroud. I prefer if it were Tammy Abraham.
Really? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's a fair call, actually. I'm thinking about Rob Holding more than anything. I think Giroud is the better player, let's be honest. It's a shame we lost him due to
mismanagement. But the problem is he can peel the other way to Tierney's side. I mean, it's not his better foot, but from a heading standpoint, he's going to win that all day and open up the angle for Pulisic, so
It depends on a few things. So let's just go over the Giroud story again, right? So let's be honest, we messed up. We should have bought Aubameyang initially in the summer, but we didn't want to pay the extra 5 to 10 million. We bought Lacazette instead. And then we got caught in a three-way thing with Giroud, Batshuayi, and Aubameyang. And to get Aubameyang out of Dortmund, Batshuayi had to go the other way, and Arsenal were forced to sell Giroud. They did not want to sell him. So it's our mismanagement. And if you think about what Giroud has done, he had that vengeful side in Baku and played out of his skin and ragdolled his mate Koscielny all over the box. He's had that vengeful moment, and that cost us 40, 50 million pounds. And now we're trying to scrabble over 20, 30 million pounds in the Europa League. And if he was to do the same at the weekend, we'd have to ask ourselves a lot of questions about losing that player. No, we really would. And think about the cost. financially, the cost sporting wise, potentially from missing out on two European competitions. So I think, you know, we got to turn up and make sure that we don't let that happen, you know, and get all over him. That'll be part of my team talk. That's
and we could have played Giroud and Aubameyang together had we really got it worked out in terms of our recruiting.
You guys still haven't made me regret it at all, just to let you know. So look,
we'll check in with you after the FA Cup final.
Yeah, no, I'm still fine. So the thing I wonder, you know, look, the thing that Giroud is absolutely exceptional at, obviously, is holding the ball up, you know, putting his back into a player, receiving the ball long, holding it up, sending someone in behind him. What worries me, you know, we're going to play the back three. I think we know that. Who is going to put a body on Giroud when they kick it long? Who's going to be the one that he's sticking his butt into to receive the ball? Because I worry about our defenders getting pulled out of position, coming up the pitch to grapple with him, lose that grapple because none of them are going to win it, and then leaving space for someone like Pulisic or Willian to run into. So, you know, it would be interesting if we gave somebody else that job. I don't know who it would be, mind you. You know, maybe you have someone like Lacazette drop all the way back in. You know, he's dropped back into the midfield in the past. I do think they've played a back three recently a lot, especially, you know, because they haven't had Conte. And Clive, I sort of think that they might go with the back three again rather than trying to bring Conte in, you know, having not played. And they've had a lot of success in the back three of late. But I do think that's even easier for us to attack. I think we really like to attack a back three. Was it Leicester who played a back three and then had to change? Who was it where we were giving them fits and they had to change it?
Leicester, we had them toast until the sending off, didn't we? We had them on toast.
And they were really struggling, and I felt they had to change it. They didn't. But, like, I think the back three is easier to attack from wide positions, easier to attack, you know, with those wide players. Now, interestingly, we'll have the same challenge with them. But to me, that this sets up like more traditional counterattacking game for us, which I really like. You know, you posed the question on the last pod, I think it was you, Clive, I could be wrong, saying, should we play against them like City? Should we allow them to be dominant? I mean, we had 42% possession at home against them, 40% away, granted down to 10 men. They are a 60% possession team against most teams anyway. I think they will dominate the ball, and I think the thing that they've struggled with a bit this season is actually unlocking deep defenses. Now, I think Pulisic, as he plays more, has created an easier opportunity for them to do that because he's a better player, you know, one-on-one against a low block than what they've had previously. But I do think that if they have a lion's share possession and we sit a little deeper and we play that Manchester City style, I think we can really expose them defensively, playing out from the back, you know, quick, long strikes up the wings. I mean, Clive, do you think that is the sort of path to victory? I don't think there's any need for us to try to go toe-to-toe with them in this game in terms of trying to have the ball and push them back.
Yeah. I mean, the game that scares me, the teams like Villa, really, when they sit back and we're forced to do something. And if we're not in the mood, we struggle, right? So we don't do things like buy free kicks. We don't run through lines. We pass. We pass in patterns. But what really gets us going is when we're passing in broken play. So mini transitions is what we really like. And for that to happen, we need a team to play us. And Chelsea will play us. They've got the personality. They will play us. And then it's about our ability to execute versus their ability to execute. And I think this is where we've got two flawed defences and how we manage the first phase. So the first phase, we need to make sure Xhaka shields and screens Giroud in front. And, you know, try to at least discourage that ball into feet. Once into feet, one touch, two really sharp runners, whether it be Willian, whether it be Mount, whether it be Pulisic, it doesn't matter which ones they choose. It'd be similar game plan, similar destruction, similar shooting from the edge of the area, trying to do 1-2s and getting behind us. So it's key that we shield that first phase ball. But if we don't win the first phase, it's not a problem. Just win the next one. We know Drew's going to lay it off in one touch. We know once he turns around, it's over for him. So really, it's about predicting where his layoffs are going to go, then taking it, reading it, and then springing. Now, once we spring, we're in good shape. Right? We're in good shape. Where we do it wing back, we're in good shape. You know, where we do it in our wide fours, if you know who they're going to be, they're good players. Right? So Bellerin's well rested. And, you know, to take your point, Elliot, he does play well against Chelsea and will need to. And I think he has a way of forcing Alonso back. I don't think that Alonso is very bright. They both want to be in the same areas, if you know what I mean, but in the other person's half. It becomes a game of cat and mouse, who's going to put each other back. That's going to be interesting. So I keep coming back to it. The wild card for me is Saka. It really is. I think he's a special player that needs a special game. has got a special game in him, and they don't know much about him. He's different.
Who's he playing for? Does Tierney take the Kolasinac role of the left-sided center back and Saka's a left wing back? I think Saka,
the left wing back. But if we want to go to a back four, we can do so really, really easily and move Saka into midfield and connect with Aubameyang. It's that hybrid nature of that player completely changes our game plan. Mm. It makes us impossible to read. It really does. Saka can play inside, and suddenly we're overloading 3-for-2 inside on Kovacic and Jorginho. And if, you know, so that player there, Elliot, trust me, I keep coming back to it. I may be massively wrong. I mean, and Niles plays and we become more cautious and we just want to block the game in the first half, make sure we don't go down, and then bring Saka in the second half. Depends what the coach wants to do.
I think it's Maitland-Niles all day, Clive. I really do. I think it's a midfield three, a Maitland-Niles, Ceballos, and Xhaka. I think it's a flat three in front of a back four, but pressed really far back.
We've never done that.
We did it against City. See, this is what I don't... Can I just say one thing that I've never really understood about the way the City game is analyzed? The way I saw us defend against City was a 4-3 defensive lineup. And what I mean by that is it was a back four, right? Mustafi, Luiz, Bellerin and Tierney, right? They all start. And then it was Maitland-Niles, Xhaka, and Ceballos sort of flat in front of that three, with Maitland-Niles going right up to Mahrez to take it off his boot, right, to really shut him down. Ceballos shutting down on the other side, and Xhaka just sort of sitting in front of the two. I didn't see it as a back three stroke back five. Now, you could say it converted into a back five in a way, you know, with Maitland-Niles dropping in there. But to me, it was more like just a really smushed together 4-3. I mean, they push you back a lot, so it's hard to see it. But yeah. I see it being Tierney, Holding, Luiz, and Bellerin, with Maitland-Niles, Xhaka, and Ceballos. Ceballos tasked with, or Maitland-Niles, maybe they switch positions. In that case, Maitland-Niles on the right, tasked with helping shutting down Pulisic one-on-one, and Ceballos on the left, helping to shut down Mount or Willian in the one-on-ones, and Xhaka sitting right in between the two center backs to help sort of buffet and buttress, you know, and push around Giroud a little bit. The good thing is I don't think Kovacic or Jorginho are particularly attack-oriented in terms of getting into the final third and really influencing the game. There, Kovacic can do it a bit. Jorginho doesn't really do it at all. So I think that's your system. And then when you break out of your hole, if it's the way I sort of laid it out, Tierney goes up and Maitland-Niles drops into the left to fill in where he goes up. And that's how we raid up the left-hand side. Or if you do it on the flip side, then it's Bellerin and Pepe raiding. And I do hope that we have a little bit of a right-sided bias to the attack in this game, because if it is Alonso, and if Rudiger's over there at the left-sided center back, if they play a three, that wing looks really vulnerable to me. With Alonso not particularly defensively oriented, and Rudiger, good luck defending Pepe in space, right? So, I totally cut you off there, but I guess maybe you can help me understand how we set up against City, because I didn't see it as the sort of the back three the way we'd been doing it, you know, with two clear outside center backs and one in the middle. It had more of a 4-3 structure, I thought.
So it's more game state, isn't it, really? And it's more what we do when we're under pressure. So when we was under pressure, we went to a five. Maitland-Niles tucked back, Tierney came inside. When we're on top, Tierney went outside, Maitland-Niles pushed up, right? So he pushed higher up.
That's
what we did. So this is what I talk about hybrid. Tierney's a hybrid. He's a left centre-half in the three, and when we're in charge, he goes to a left-back, right? And then Maitland-Niles says, I'm out of here. I'm pushing on. We're in charge. I'm going to support the attack. Whether that player... Yeah,
sorry, can I just stop? I said something wrong. I meant Maitland-Niles pushed up and Tierney tucked in is what I meant, obviously.
Yes, yes.
I had it backwards. I apologize.
But we're saying the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's all in game state. So go get the system out of your mind and think about the ability to change. And remember my temperature gauge scenario?
Mm-hmm.
Maitland-Niles was a temperature gauge. He was going up and down the wing, depending on when we're in charge and when we're not. Is Saka better than that, than Maitland-Niles, on a day where we might have a little bit more of the ball? Potentially could be. It doesn't worry me. I love both players, right? It doesn't bother me which one we choose, long as we own the story of the game, right? So there was about two or three occasions, sorry, probably a bit harsh, where I was wishing Maitland-Niles had a left foot because he got in on that left-hand side. We didn't punish him on the day because we were up. We didn't really give him much stick. But we all thought, wow, we could have got another goal in there if he had a better left foot.
Mm.
Imagine if that Saka with that left foot. We're going to find the cross, aren't we?
But he can't. But Saka, I don't think... can do what Maitland-Niles did to Mahrez. Now, you might say there is no Mahrez on Chelsea, that Mount or Willian don't scare you the way Mahrez does, and so Saka is sufficient, plus he adds that extra attacking that, that Maitland-Niles doesn't. I mean, is that how you see it? What if you flip it around? What if you put Maitland-Niles on the right side to do the job on Pulisic and then raid forward on his stronger foot and just flip Ceballos around to the other side?
But then you're really asking Bellerin on occasion to be a right-sided centre-half, right? So to play that hybrid role. I've only seen Tierney do it and, you know, so well. Kolasinac does it, but not as well as Tierney, not as good close to his box or his centre-halves, not so good in his box, full stop. He's so better outside of his box.
Isn't Elliot suggesting dropping Bellerin and playing Maitland-Niles?
I'm not. I'm just saying you take the City setup and you switch Ceballos and Maitland-Niles around.
Oh.
And okay. You let Ceballos sort of... Cause, and here, guys, this is why I think formations are weird, right? I get it, right? I see how you could see the City performance as a back three, right? Where the three is Tierney, mm-hmm. Luiz, and Mustafi. The wing backs are Maitland-Niles and Bellerin. But, like, watching it, it didn't feel that way to me. Watching it, it felt like Maitland-Niles was more sort of man-marking Mahrez in a way, you know, sort of following Mahrez around, and Ceballos was sort of guarding the channel on the right side. And that
but it's not just that game, Ellie. I mean, game after game, we swirl from that bottom left-hand corner. It doesn't matter if it's Xhaka up there or whoever. People will pop into that third position there, and then we kind of swivel up that side. And as the wing back pushes up and becomes the winger, the third center back becomes the full back wing back. And it's just then see, instead of having three center backs, you have two, because why would you need to keep two back when you're in possession and everybody's upfield? So you go to a kind of a 2-3-5 kind of structure.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it doesn't really matter where you pull the player from, but out of possession or when the ball's in our half, we're going to have three at the back, two wing backs, and that's going to rotate up the left side, which is normally how we attack, and suddenly you got two center backs and that personnel, whoever makes it up, just ends up spreading up the wing. But it all kind of holds together. They got their spaces, they got their gaps. And as Clive said, I think it's more a function of game state than the fact that it's truly a four at the back.
I'm probably in the wrong here.
I don't think City is the only game where you see that dynamic going on, is my point.
Yeah, I guess the reason it confuses me a little is there were times that I felt Maitland-Niles was actually defending more infield of Tierney during that Manchester City game, and
but that's where Mahrez took him.
Right. Yeah. All right. That's fair. So I saw that as more of a free role. So I guess the question then, look, without me just continuing to bury myself in wrong analysis of the City game, let me ask you this, Paul, stay with you for a second. Like, do you think the right move here though is Maitland-Niles, whether you want to call that a wing back role, you know, or a sort of free defensive, defensive free agent kind of role off the ball to target their danger man. Do you think Maitland-Niles is the right pick here and that he should maybe go back to his stronger right-hand side where Pulisic might be, stay where he was in the City game, or do you like Clive's idea of Saka coming in for him and just giving us more threat up the wing?
Yeah, no, I think Saka giving us more threat. I think Mount is going to pull quite a bit into midfield if you've got Maitland-Niles, but not to the same effect Mahrez does where he's attacking the box. So I don't think you play a right-sided wing back or whatever against Mount to stop him going into midfield. I mean, that just doesn't work. He'll probably be moving in without the ball rather than with the ball. So you could have just Maitland-Niles twiddling his thumb out on the wing because Mount keeps saying, all right, I'll leave him there, confuse them, and become a third midfielder, an advanced attacking midfielder. And so Maitland-Niles spends a lot of time not adding value, whereas Saka will always provide that threat on the left-hand side that's going to worry Mount and James and pull them back and create space there if they don't go with him. Clive's onto something with Tierney and Saka. They're both so flexible that if they move up, they can't be ignored. So Tierney's going to have to be covered and Saka's going to have to be covered. If Maitland-Niles runs up the wing, he doesn't provide that threat that they're going to say, oh my God, I didn't go with him. He's going to cross or he's going to cut infield from the left. So I think he'll do a lot. Saka and Tierney will do a lot more to keep Mount and James busy and pushed back than Maitland-Niles can. If I was going to play Maitland-Niles anywhere, I'd play him on the right against Bellerin, but then Pulisic doesn't have a defined path he attacks on. So again, having Maitland-Niles on the right, being a left-footed fullback, I don't see it. It really gives us anything new there. I like Maitland-Niles, especially this version of Maitland-Niles at the moment where he's focused and on it, etc. But I don't think this is the game for him.
All right. Well, I'm torn. I mean, I think that Chelsea and City are very different in terms of the amount of threat they pose. Obviously, City don't have that those players in midfield, the Silva, De Bruyne type characters. They have high volume passers in Kovacic and Jorginho, but they're not going to get into the positions that that Silva and De Bruyne do on the edge of the box and really pull you apart. So, I think that changes the calculus. And I do think that getting at their... Look, City don't give you a lot of chances. They're a really hard team to figure out. You do want to counterattack them. They leave you some space. We did it intelligently. Chelsea don't restrict you to as few chances as City do. And obviously, you look at the goals they've conceded this season, they're very vulnerable. So I definitely think that you can reap the rewards by being a little braver in this game in terms of picking a lineup that can hurt them. I mean, Clive, do you agree with me, though, that the right side, that Pepe going against that sort of Alonso Rudiger flank with help from Bellerin, if that's what it winds up being, is something that we should try to really target as an area we can exploit? Where do you think our best opportunity to hurt them will be?
Yeah, I think Pepe's key. I think Rudiger is basically a hand grenade walk around the pitch wanting to do something stupid. I would always give Pepe as many touches as possible so he doesn't disconnect from the game. The way we use Pepe, we tend to isolate him. So I almost call him our Kyrie Irving. We leave him one-on-one. Can we get him one-on-one? And we almost don't support him. So whenever you see passing maps, there's nothing coming to Pepe. He gets the odd little pass. There's no one around him. I'm not sure if he needs anyone around him, but what he does need is early service at the right pace. He can use the first touch, use the pace of the ball to get away from his man. And he's an excellent passer. The link to Aubameyang is now well-known. So if I'm Chelsea, I'm thinking I have to stop that. Rudiger's a lefty. He's coming on his right foot. You're not going to stop him. He's going to get delivery there. Can he get to a point into zone 14 where he can get some banging shots? That's what I'd like to see him develop. When he starts doing that, then we got the player we paid for, right? So he's now taking the passing options, which is great. I want him to see him be more aggressive. He tends to be more aggressive when he's more space, when he can see space. Then he really attacks it. When there's crowd scenes, he manipulates the ball, holds the ball, and he looks for a pass. I like to see him wall pass off Lacazette and get some shots off. I think that would really start to shake Chelsea. We can get behind their midfield too. I totally believe that. I agree with you. That right-hand side is really saying, come in here. But I don't think we should overload like we do the left. You know, we're naturally going to do the left-hand side. That's where our better players are. We go to the right, we zigzag to the right, then we switch back to the left, where our finisher is, right, who then sees the free space. He can see the game, and he says, okay, I'm going to arrive here. You can't stop me. And that's our skill. That's our thing that we've got at the moment. So I think Pepe needs a big game. Well, I say that every game because I think he's really, really a good player. But he needs to have a good final. I think it'd be really good for him to end the season in a good way. We all want him to do well. We can all see he's a player there. There comes a point in time when if you deliver in a game like this, I mean, Aaron Ramsey delivered in two cup finals and he's a hero, right? Delivering a cup final, people do not forget you. And this is a chance to really crown off his first season.
Mm. Paul, you have any thoughts on that? Where the danger comes from? You agree with Clive?
From our side? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he described it rather well, that early ball at the right pace. You can just see if you get it to him where he has his options ahead of him, he'll start twisting them around. If you give it to him too late where they're already set and they're in their box, there's only so much he can do. He can bang in that curler of a cross. The threat the other way, you know, set pieces is going to be a big deal when you have, sorry to be on my Giroud theme here, but you know, they've got two dimensions we don't have. They can handle the long ball, the flick on out when they want to mix it up and set off Pulisic. I think that is something we don't have at the moment, unless we're sitting right back and we're counter-attacking and we hit them on the break a couple of times. But I don't think there's going to be that imbalance. So they have that long ball option, and then they're going to have set pieces, corners, etc. And we don't really have that aerial threat. So the threat going the other way, I think Giroud could have a really big day here.
I just don't see it, because I think he's the worst player to ever play football. I don't know if I've expressed that opinion, wrong opinion, I should say. Look, I know I'm tempting fate, but if I've got to go down in flames with some striker being the guy who's going to torment me, I'm okay with it being Olivier Giroud, okay? 39-year-old Olivier Giroud, where the hell he is. I know he's sexy and tall and has nice hair and all that, but come on, Paul. I mean, you got to admit, like, we're hand-wringing about Olivier fucking Giroud here. Like, it's not.
I always thought he was much better than you did.
Yeah, but he's not Kun Aguero. He's not, you know, he's not Suarez. He's not Messi. He's not Ronaldo. I mean, this isn't, you know, we're not going up against, I wouldn't want to play Rashford. I wouldn't want to go up against, Salah and Mane. And, you know, I mean.
But part of our issue with Giroud, and part of, I think, your issue with Giroud is we didn't use him particularly well, especially in his later years. I mean, he was a very good player for the first few years.
He's a perfectly fine player. I agree. I just don't think he's an elite striker. And I realize I'm super tempting fate, but, like, let's get into it. I mean, the other thing we know from XG, the one thing XG has taught us is, like, headed chances are low XG. So if I've got to play a guy who's great with his feet, can beat a man, can run in space and finish, or I got to play a guy who's a big body who can head the ball, well, I'm going to take the latter, because I know, statistically speaking, the latter is a lower percentage chance. Now, I know that's
okay,
rich. Yeah, go ahead.
There's three up front. There's Pulisic, there's Mount, there's Willian, and there's Giroud. And it's the combination of the three that's either good or bad.
I'm more scared of his runs to the near post, candidly, Paul. Like, those scare me more than headers, because, you know, if you're going to have to face a chance, you want it to be a header, right?
Yeah. And, like, it's not that that he can only do headers or they can only score through him. It's the combination of they've been a very good attacking side.
Yes.
And Giroud's
yep.
been on a bit of a tear recently,
mm-hmm.
and he's getting his goals, and they're going to have set pieces, and we've been vulnerable to them. And corners, free kicks, etc., are a scoring opportunity we kind of don't have at the moment, and they do. In a finely balanced match, it's not that I don't think we can win this. I'm optimistic about our chances, but I still think they have a couple of things they can do we can't that will be important in this game. And those flick-ons from the long ball setting off Pulisic scare me if we play a higher line. And Giroud's hold-up play, all that good stuff. And, you know, Lacazette, we're still working out, is he back in form? And what is he when he's in form? He drops into midfield and helps out. But what else does he do? Are we truly using that front three as effectively as Chelsea can use their front three? I think Giroud just makes a whole lot of sense in this game. And he doesn't have to be the greatest player in the world, because we're not playing one player. They are using him very effectively to set off the whole team, and he's getting his goals,
yes.
and he's going to be a threat on set pieces.
Yeah, look. He's in great form. There's no denying yeah. that. He's started 12 times this season. He's played less than 1,000 minutes. He has 8 goals, all right? 8 goals in 12 starts, 18 appearances. So I can't deny the form he's in.
It's not a debate about whether he's great. That's not what I'm saying.
No,
I'm not saying
he's the best. I'm just saying he's the type of threat. And this, again, I know I'm tempting fate, but he's the type of threat that I feel we have the better chance to handle. That doesn't mean we will. We're defensively terrible. We can concede to anybody. Well, let me ask you this, because I know you have to go here pretty soon. Just real quick, on the other side of it, do you think there's any chance Kepa will start, or do you assume it'll be Caballero? And, like, how important is their goalkeeper position? And do we need to maybe have a strategy to be a little more willing to take some shots?
Well, we definitely need more shots, especially if Kepa's on the field. We don't... I mean, I guess we've been a little bit better recently getting shots off. And this could be, you know, this could be a great game for Pepe, as we've talked about, if he can start getting his shots off and Aubameyang. And, you know, I don't think Kepa starts. I think they're kind of making their bed and lying in it with Kepa, so they'll be okay pissing him off for the FA Cup final. But that's just my not close enough to what to the Chelsea pulse. My guess is it won't be him. So maybe you don't go gangbusters banging in shots from all over the place. But we're shot shy, and I think we'll still continue to be a little bit shot shy in this game. It'll maybe be a little bit more even. I don't know. I don't think at the end of the day the goalkeeper really is going to be the factor for us. I think it's how effective they are using Giroud up front with Pulisic, and how good they are at overloading the midfield will be the determinants on their side. And our side, if we can make that the left side tick, which why I think is so important with Tierney and Saka, get things going there so that we have our own jokers, our own switches of play over to Pepe when they've taken their eye off his positions there. And that's where it comes from. It won't be goals from midfield, we know that. Our front three all have goals in them at the moment, so that's good. But the threat, the creativity, we got to get up that left-hand side. And whether we have 50% of the possession, probably not, but we'll have a reasonable share of the possession, and we go at them from there.
Mm. Well, I know I have to let you go. I got to at least pin you down to a prediction score.
So I think it'll be a draw. So my question is, what happens then? It goes to full-time, 30 minutes, and then penalties. That's how the final works. Yep. And we lose on penalties.
Fuck.
There you go.
That
I think it's 2-2.
I'd rather lose 10-0, honestly. 2-2 and we lose on penalties is not a tolerable outcome.
Yeah, it might sound pessimistic, but I'm not really. I think it's a pretty even contest. I think they have a little bit of the upper hand, and I think there's a really good chance we're tied at full time, and who knows, in extra time.
Okay. Well, I certainly hope you're wrong, but I appreciate you being here. Yeah. Enjoy it, Paul. Big day. Paul's on Twitter. Paul's in my pants. Thanks, bud.
Woohoo.
All right. Paul's gone. Clive, let's start to turn towards home here in terms of predictions and existential ramifications, things like that. I mean, first things first, just how are you feeling? I mean, looking at the matchup, looking at all things being equal, I mean, look, they've been much, much better than us all season. But against the bigger teams lately, we've sort of had an approach that has worked. I think it can work against them. They are vulnerable defensively. You know, we don't create a lot of chances, but, you know, against City, we showed that when we can counterattack, we can be dangerous. How are you feeling sort of overarchingly about the direction this game could go?
Yeah, I think for me, I did some things this week, which I never normally do. I actually listened to some Chelsea podcasts, because sometimes it's always good to know your enemy, right? Know what they're thinking, what they're feeling. None of them think that Kepa's going to play. That's one thing. And their issue is, how can we get him out? £72 million, record goalkeeper. Is he going to go on loan to build up his price because they've made a boo-boo? But they've got so many young academy players, they can recoup that money. They'll live, right? And Roman would go behind the sofa and sort that one out. So Kepa's done, and Chelsea will buy a new goalkeeper there. They've also got concerns about whether Kante plays or not. So again, they feel more comfortable when he plays. There's a feeling that they feel that Arsenal, they're not really worried about us in any which way or form, although they are worried about their defence. And this is why I lean towards Saka, because we have to win a game. We have to win a game. We have to, against City, there was a feeling that we could nick it, but it's important not to be in the game. And so the system and how we played was perfect for the day, and we could have scored a couple more. Against Chelsea, I feel we have to try to win the game and not go out there in a situation not to lose it. But it is important that we're in the game. Again, it's a difficult game to sort of predict. I do think we'll steal it. Paul's prediction is a worrying one, because Caballero's key trick is penalty saving. So we don't really want to get to that point, because this is what they complained about before. They wanted to bring him on in City against the cup final. Because he's an expert at penalty saving, so we don't want to get to that situation. But I do, and also I think the longer the game goes on, the better Chelsea will be because of the quality of their substitutions. So it has to be 90 minutes for me. We have to take the lead. I think we're going to be in the right state of frame of mind. Sorry, I felt with Baku, we over-prepared for the game. We tried too hard with the time zone thing. We were there like a week before Chelsea almost. We had a gap. We went in there with the weight of the world on our shoulders. I don't think we approached it with a level of confidence. We approached it because we ballsed up the last league games with a level of fear. Chelsea strolled in, already in the Champions League, turned up in the morning, had a burger, popped out the pitch and won the game. Right? So, yeah. And I think getting the approach is really important. I think we're going to get the approach for a Wembley Cup final much better. I think the coach is much better on his details. I think the coach has a much greater relationship. I think the players felt that once Baku was done, I thought the manager was done. And I think it's important the club recognised that, and they didn't. They should have. You often hear me talk about, it's almost like a sliding doors moment last year. Last year, January, think about this, for example. I know I always often go on about Denis Suarez and how he messed up, and I always wanted Christopher Nkunku to come in. But just imagine if he did come in, Christopher Nkunku. Right? We'd have probably qualified for the Champions League. And guess who our manager would probably be right now?
Unai Emery. Yeah. Perish the thought.
And I don't think we'd have made enough progress as a club. And I know we're in a worse position. We have less points, less goals, less shots. But in a strange way, I feel incredibly positive about where we're going. The most important thing for me, and it's almost if we can't lose on Saturday. And you, I know people are going to criticise me, but in my opinion, we can't lose. And the reason why I say that is, if we win, I'll be buzzing. We're in Europa League. The manager's got a trophy in his back pocket, and these players win together. It only allows them to buy into the manager's philosophy even more. But the most important thing for me is what we do post Saturday, not Saturday. What we do as a club post Saturday is the most important thing. Because at the end of next season, we cannot be talking about a last game to get into the Europa League. We have to be talking about Champions League football. In my personal opinion, I feel that we have a better chance of Champions League next year if we're not in Europe. But I want us to win this game massively on Saturday, which in some ways means I can't lose, if that makes sense. Because I do think Liverpool made the jump from 9th to 4th when they weren't in Europe. Spurs made the jump to get in Champions League when they weren't in Europe. I personally feel next year's European competitions are going to be terrible. There's going to be no fans. It's going to be difficult logistical situations to get to these games. If there's ever a year not to be in Europe, given what's happened with COVID, etc., this is the year. Now, that's not me saying I don't want us to win the game on the weekend, because obviously I do. But if we weren't to win, we could reset. But then you're saying, club, we need the money. That's where the club has to step up. The club has to step up and find the extra money to support this manager. Lots of people talk about this guy. This guy is being looked at. I promise you. This manager is good. Right? So we need to do our work, regardless of the result on Saturday, to make sure this manager is in our club, not just next year, but many years going forward. And if we do that right, he will be. There is no way we can allow people like Frank Lampard to stroll around like the new next big thing. He's not a patch on our manager.
No, I agree with that.
We all know it. Same for Solskjaer. Not a patch. Not a patch on this guy. The most important thing, Elliot, is, and football's everything to all of us, right? The result is everything. And trust me, I'll be biting my nails off on Saturday. But the most important thing for Arsenal Football Club is we support this manager in the transfer market, allow him to sell and buy appropriately so we can see the team we want to see. Because right now we're making do. It's exciting. The underlying numbers haven't changed that much, mate, have they? You know the drill. So we need to support this guy so we can really see some progress going forward.
So, I mean, I think it's interesting, Clive, because last summer I felt, you know, Chelsea had Champions League locked up. They, you know, they didn't need to win the Europa League to get in. We had more on the line, and that would make it, you know, a more urgent final for us when, in fact, we just sort of choked it away. Hard to know how much of that is the manager and the players choking and what the case may be, or just being the less good team. Similar situation here. Chelsea have Champions League locked up. They don't need to win the FA Cup for anything other than, you know, lifting a cup, which is nice. We need it to get back into Europe, and whether or not you think that's something we should try to do, it's still a carrot dangling on the end of the stick. Do you think that the urgency plays into our hands in any way, or is negative for us in any way? Is there a way that you think that tips the scales in terms of Chelsea feeling like it's job done for the season and has one eye on, you know, I was going to say the beach, if you're even allowed to go to a beach anymore, but you know what I mean? How do you think that the urgency factors into providing an edge to one team or the other?
Hey, Chelsea enjoying kicking Arsenal off their London perch, didn't they? Mm. They've enjoyed taking our trophies, even taking some of our players, right, against our will. So they're not going to walk into this game and pretend it doesn't matter. I thought they would last year, but I forgot that Eden Hazard's last game, he decided to have a bit of a sprint, right? And that was the end of that. Once he decided to turn up, the game was over. So they're harder to read. Everyone says Hazard's not there, so we should be better. I don't think, I thought we just blew that game last year. We just froze. And let's be honest, our two forwards froze. You know, let's be honest, David Luiz, the player that people are mocking, put Aubameyang and Lacazette in his pocket. Mm. Right? So think about that for a minute. And they were a shell of the normal selves that they were in Valencia in the semi-final. You know, it was all there. The team was there. The system was there. We didn't turn up. We didn't turn up for whatever reason. And for me, that's preparation. So I think we'll be better prepared this time. That's for sure. I think we are set up to solve more problems. It all comes down to execution. It all comes down to both boxes, like most football matches. I'm not too worried about midfield. You know my thoughts on midfield. I don't think there isn't any anymore. We seem to go from a base to our five channels. That's what football's about. And that progression box to box is not there at the moment in the trend of football. In many of these big games, it's all about how we can push people back. It's a game of cat and mouse. So I'm not too worried about midfield, as long as we don't lose it. Right, that's the key thing. It's all about getting the ball, progressing the ball into the final third. The worry I have about Arsenal in our final third is we have two strikers who I call exclamation points in Lacazette and Aubameyang. They're last touch players, really. Lacazette's done well dropping in and creating problems for the holding midfielder and the centre midfield. But really, we're asking Aubameyang to be a semi-creator and also be our exclamation point. Pepe's a creator, doesn't touch the ball enough because the service team is, although it's improving, it's not good enough in my opinion. And we don't put enough responsibility on him to be an exclamation point scorer like Liverpool do with Salah, for example. So that's why our goals are 10 or so behind Chelsea. If we had those goals, we wouldn't have drawn 14 games and the gap we see wouldn't be there. But the good thing is, Arsenal is a team that's not so easy to beat. We are quite resilient. We don't lose that many games. We lost less games than Chelsea and Man City. So that is good cup. That's a good cup side. That's a good cup philosophy. It's no surprise we're in this game. I think if we show that resilience and make sure we execute when we need to, I see us edging the game just by one goal.
Mm. I would take that. Will you give that to me?
No, you can have it.
I'll take it. Look, I'm torn because I am inclined when Arsenal play, as weird as it sounds, to be overly optimistic. I know that's bizarre, but every time we go into a game, I see the scenarios where we can do well in the game. I see Chelsea's weakness, the mountain of goals they've conceded, the way they are vulnerable in wide positions to attacks, you know, counterattacks in wide positions. And I say, we can have them there. That's us to a T. The problem is, we also, I don't know if you've noticed, like to concede lots of goals. And, yeah. You know, look, we have struggled to score and create chances against teams that can sit and block us off and force us to break them down. Because we're just not real good at doing that because we don't have players that do it. You don't need a 10 to play on the counter. I think Chelsea have 60% possession in this game. And I think if they have 60% possession, we create the chances to win the game. Clive, if you told me that we were going to have 50% possession in this game, I tell you, I'm less confident. Because I don't like our chances moving up the pitch in numbers on the ball, trying to push them back and break them down. I do like our chances being disciplined like we were against City, picking our chances to raid quickly, you know, play out from the back, draw them in, spring the trap, and away we go, up the wings where they're vulnerable. I think they'll play Emerson. I just don't think that they want to expose themselves to the risk of Alonso. They played Emerson against us in the last game we played. I think they'll do it again. But if they play Alonso, I really love the right side as a place to go get them, go hurt them. And I think Bellerin and Pepe will cause them all kinds of trouble there. Now, look, Alonso, there's a reason he plays. He is an attacking threat. And a Pulisic-Alonso wing is going to be a really, really tricky thing for us to keep out. So, you know, that could just be like two boxers, right, Clive? I mean, their left wing and our right wing taking shots at each other to see who's got the bigger glass jaw. And I think we both have a glass jaw. Like, could it really come down to that? If they start Alonso and Pulisic on their left, and we have Bellerin and Pepe on our right, that wing could just be like the drunk part of the game where there's openings and attacks and opportunities created at both ends on that side of the pitch.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. And the first time we did this, I felt that my original thought was Maitland-Niles should play on the right, Saka on the left. That's what I wanted to see happen. When Bellerin went down with a calf injury, I thought, well, maybe that is going to happen. Now he's back, I'm thinking, okay, come on, mate. Clive, this guy's played in cup finals before. He's played in big games before. He's going to play. If he doesn't play, he's going to leave. So the manager's going to pick him. Right? So although I think if you ask me footballistically-wise, what would I do? I would play Maitland-Niles on the right-hand side. I think he's a better one-on-one defender. And if I'm Chelsea, I'm looking at Rob Holding and I'm seeing Christmas. Right? I'm going to go for him. I'm going to make his feet move. Right? I'm going to make Giroud knock his head off.
Is there a weird chance that, like, Socrates comes back from the dead and play? Like, is there a chance that he doesn't play Holding? That he could he go like Tierney, Luiz, and Socrates? Or Socrates is that right-sided center back. He could play over there. Yes. I mean, he hasn't played at all, though. I mean, could he do something crazy like pick Cedric and say, Cedric, you're going to play right-sided center back?
He's cup-tied,
right?
Yeah,
he can't do that. Yeah,
he can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, so is there a creative solution he might look for here if he's really worried about Holding? Or do you think he'll just say, Holding's my guy, I got to play him?
Something I nearly said for the City game, actually, was actually playing all the fullbacks. Literally, don't play one centre-half because they're not going to go in the air. It's all about nimble feet. So one of my little theories for the City game was playing Maitland-Niles as the right centre-half because you are literally playing against wingers all across their midfield and all across their attack, right? So having all the fullbacks in defence makes a lot of sense. The problem is with Chelsea, they've got height. Got Alonso, they've got Giroud, they've got Rudiger, they've got Zuma. They've got big players, so they can load you. They can load you on set pieces. You can't do that against City. So you can't be creative. So Holding's going to play, and we're going to need him. And he's done it before. One, my hope is that he can raise his levels to the levels of 2017, where he had something to do. The good thing about inexperienced players and young players, give them a job, give him Giroud. Go on then, mate. He's yours. Get after him. Bounce him. Knock him. We'll come around you. I'm hoping that's what happened. And once you give Holding a job, I think games become clearer to him. Once you give him too much time in possession and you start to make him think, then I think he can get a little bit indecisive. So what he needs is a hard, hard physical game because I think his trigger goes off and he rises to that challenge. Giroud is a perfect player for him to play against. I think he knows that job. He's been brought up in that job. Playing big centre forwards is what you do in England when you're young. That's your job. When you're the big guy, you face off to the big guy. So, and he's not too quick, so it won't be a running race. So this is why I think Holding will play, and hopefully the matchup will be like that. Now, Tierney, if Drew sits on Tierney, Tierney's clever. What he does is he stands behind you, he touches your back so you can feel him, then he nicks in front and steals it. Right, and if he plays off your first touch, he nicks around the corner, he's incredibly tight. You never get a chance to turn around on him. Obviously, if you put him towards his penalty area, he's going to lose the battle in the air because he's only 5'10". But Drew always wants to show you a number. And so it's the second phase, he goes into the box, and then it's 50-50 what happens after that. Stop the cross, otherwise he's going to do something. So near post, he needs brilliant at that near post blocking. Holding, not so much. Diagonal runs off his shoulder, not so good in the box. So this is when Luiz has to come in, right? So Holding outside the box is our man. Inside the box, it has to be David Luiz and Tierney because they're the better defenders. They track runners. They see things earlier, right? So that's how I hope the game goes. We've got to keep Drew away from our box. But what he does is he touches off and he sprints to the penalty box. He knows what he's doing, right? I don't worry about him. I like him. You know, I like him. But I'm with you. I'm glad we're not playing Rashford, Martial, and Greenwood. You see what I mean? Because they're the sort of forwards we don't want to play against. Mm. They've got size, they've got dribble, they've got shots, they've got sprinting speed. We don't want to be playing them. You know, we don't want to be playing them. That'd be really hard. Because as soon as we go forward, we're dead on the counter. But Chelsea sort of suit us, but we've got to do our job when we have the chance. And I think the issue is our ability to execute. We did it versus City beautifully. Can we do it again?
Yeah. You know what's so weird about this game, Clive, is like, you look at our central midfield and you're like, ugh. We don't create anything there. It's a wasteland. Between Jorginho and Kovacic, Chelsea have two non-penalty expected goals and 4 expected assists. Like this, the midfield is total irrelevance in this game. It is the strangest thing. These are teams that are going to hurt each other or not by what they do on the wings. And we both want to do the same things. And it's just, it's so interesting how that works. Now, granted, they have players, you know, like Mount, who will float more into the center of the pitch, or, you know, Pulisic might do that. But realistically, no, they want to overload the wings. They want to hurt you there, get, you know, cross the ball into Giroud. We want to do the same sort of stuff. I think Lacazette could be a really important player here, dropping into the midfield, dropping in behind Kovacic and Jorginho and distributing, you know, pushing the ball past them. He did it a lot against City, and I think he can do it against them. It's one of the interesting things that I think, if Conte does start, I think that that could be a problem for us, nullifying Lacazette's ability to drop in, receive the ball, and start a counterattack. But I don't think he will. I think he'll stay with the back three. And I do still think there's a chance Pulisic doesn't start, but that's another story. So, I mean, do you agree with me, though, that it's very weird that you have two teams like this who pose almost no threat in central midfield? You know, and that the game is going to take... I mean, there's going to be no grass left on the pitch on the half spaces and wings, you know?
Well, you know, I want to have this conversation maybe when we do our squad building, etc. But you know my thoughts on midfield. The attributes have changed, right? So you have attacking wing forwards that do the creative midfield job and score. Or you have high number eights do that job. So the old days, I say the old days are literally 2 years ago or last year, mm-hmm. when you had one player in midfield, another player driving forward box to box, I'm not seeing it, mate. I'm not seeing it. I don't know what numbers are saying when it comes to, you know, XG and assist and XA. I don't know those numbers. But what I'm seeing is a game of 5 channels. How can we push teams back? You need a base to your team. You need to create an axis which you rock around. You have an interior and you have an exterior. Your exterior is the ability to control the game. Your interior is where you don't lose the game. That's your rock. That's your pillar. You have your box there and you rock around that, depending on whether you're in charge of the game or not. Right. And everyone else has to push up quickly, get up quickly. And how can we use that base of our midfield to service the front areas of the pitch? Right. So how can they manipulate themselves away from pressure to service one of the 5 channels that we're trying to hit? That's where the game is going. Those players have to have the ability to receive it on the half term, get away from people and progress it. You don't want them running past centre forwards like we won the FA Cup in 2014 doing that. Right, we don't want that anymore. That leaves us exposed down the middle. You don't do that. That's where the risk is.
Mm.
Don't allow transition on you down your middle. Right, so football is changing. You know, so when people are thinking about building the squads for next year, they need to be thinking about where the game is going. Also, they need to be thinking about not just what we're doing, but different systems we're going to have to play against. What Arsenal have not done well against, it's not Chelsea's. They've not done well against teams that played 5-3-2. You see what I mean? We haven't got a pattern of play to break down that deep block with 5 at the back.
Yep.
That's what Villa did. So the Villa game scares me. Right? So in Arteta's strategy, as he's building, he hasn't got a team yet for 5-3-2 or 5-3-1-1, whatever it is. He hasn't got that team. Or 5-4-1. That's really what you're talking about with a deep block, aren't you? We haven't got that yet. Right? So that's the next phase of our development. So what we're going to have at the weekend, we're going to have a team that's got the same weight gloves as we've got.
Mm.
And we're going to punch each other, right? So who's got the strongest chin?
Yeah, and I mean, neither of us do. That's what makes this game so interesting. And I do, that's why I think Lacazette has a really interesting role in this game to play, assuming he starts, because it is that area, that middle of the pitch sort of, beyond the central midfielders are in that space where the central midfielders operate. Xhaka and Ceballos are not going to create the danger any more than Jorginho and Kovacic are, in the sense that, you know, they may play the intermediate value pass, the pass before the pass. They're not going to be the ones that turn the game, but can Lacazette drop in and be the guy who does it? Maybe. Yeah. Maybe he could. I will say that this game is going to be absolutely wild. I think it's going to be a crazy cup final. I'm going to go for Arsenal 3-2. I see goals. I see mistakes. We've been gifted some goals pressing, and I think they have some players who can be forced into mistakes trying to press, pressing at the back, trying to play it out from the back. So we'll see how that goes. But more than anything, it's just a total narrative transforming game for Arsenal. And whether you care about narrative or not, this season has fucking sucked. There's no way around it. The Olympiacos, the Europa League exit, the way the league has gone, the Emery era, some of the disappointments that we've had when we really were in a chase for a European place and threw it away. But the FA Cup, as always, once again, has provided solace. And now there is a cup at the end of this season that we could grab. And much like 2017, which was a terrible season that ended in celebration, we can do it again in the exact same way we did it then. Earn ourselves some Europe, earn ourselves some money. I think getting Europe actually matters. I know some people disagree with me, but the Europa League is a chance to keep our kids home and play them a lot at the start of the season. It's six extra games where players like Nelson and ESR and Nketiah and Willock can play in lower stakes games. And if you have that, you don't have to loan them out. I think it's valuable. So whatever we do, I just hope we win. I think if there's any analysis you need from me, that is it. I hope we win. I know you hope we win. I know we all hope we win. Cup final day, big cup final, first game for Tim and Deb's new baby. So this will determine that baby's life as a luck charm, hopefully a good luck charm. No pressure, baby. No pressure. You got to win this game for us. In any event, Clive's on Twitter, ClivePFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is Alex Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. We will have a pod tomorrow. We will have a pod after the cup. We will have a pod on Monday. We'll have pods all the time, but it will be more fun doing them after we hoist the cup on Saturday. Come on, Arsenal. Come on, Mikel. Rouse the troops. Set them up right. Let's beat Chelsea to win the cup. Wouldn't that be a neat thing? Great way to end the game. We all need it. It's been a shit year, and there's no better way to lift yourself from a shit year than making Chelsea fans miserable. And on that note, we do love you. We appreciate you for being here. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. We hope you enjoy the cup final. And we hope that you are celebrating a victory along with us all over the world at the end of it. Come on, Arsenal. We love you. We'll talk to you after Arsenal 10, Chelsea 0.